This is the Green Lantern Spotlight for January 2010.
Episode 38. Space. It seems I've yet to find my place. I'm guarding 2814. I don't know why it's chosen me. From the corner of my eye, I catch a glimpse of evil light. If fear tries to swallow me,
and now, the host of the Green Lantern Spotlight podcast, Frankie Mateo.
I say welcome everyone to today's session of the Green Lantern Spotlight. The premiere spots require a bit of insight as to subjects of, why does Larfleeze have like a 1,000,000% ring charge? Also be aware of our sponsor site, thegreenlanterncore.com, a humble place to discuss all sorts of Green Lantern related news and rumors. Remember, that's thegreenlanterncore.com. I'm your host, Frankie Mateo, formerly known as Rainer2814. We have with us today Brandon West, the co-webmaster of the hit site, the speedster site, proboards.com. Greetings, Brandon.
Hey.
We also have with us Musard. Musard, how are you doing?
Hey.
We also have Eric.
What's up, everybody?
And we also have our gracious sponsor, And the founder of thegreenlanterncore.com, Andrew NDB. How are you, sir?
Good, good. How the hell are you?
I'm doing decent.
All right.
And with that, we're going to go on to the news.
News.
Let's see. On today's first topic, we have the fact that The Brightest Day has been announced, a new bi-weekly series written by Jeff Johns and Peter Tomasi, with covers by David Finch and art by Fernando Pazarin and other artists to be named later, will feature a header on several other DCU titles such as Green Lantern, Green Lantern Corps, The Flash, Justice League of America, and Titans. The series is also set up to spin directly out of The Blackest Night, which is currently going on, and is set to star Mera and Ray Palmer, a.k.a. The Atom, among other characters. How are we actually dealing with the news of, you know, the fact that The Brightest Night has been announced and will be featuring these characters in it? Let's go with, I don't know, random. Eric, what do you think?
I think it's, it seems stupid at this point to be cynical. I mean, it seems stupid at this point to say something like DC's trying to cash in, but it does seem like they're deliberately trying to ruin every goodwill they've gained from this event by beating it to death, to the point where, like, they're literally dragging the body through the streets with a bi-weekly series. I think DC, overall, huge fail. I think, especially considering that at this point, the miniseries seems to be about everybody but Green Lantern. What was the point of even calling it Brightest Day? And again, especially with all the solicitations that DC's released and the incentives they're giving, the spoilers they're giving for the storylines, it's proving that Blackest Night, again, is having no long-standing effect on the DC universe. And I'm not disappointed, but I guess I expected something like this. They did the same exact thing for Infinite Crisis. When Infinite Crisis was halfway over and doing pretty well, they released a series of events that did nothing but ruin all the impetus and momentum of the series.
All right. Colton, what do you think?
I'm not so bothered by it. I mean, there had to have been some form of aftermath, and well, there's a lot of long-standing events that are going on here. We're affecting, like, death itself, and we have to deal with all these issues. And I always had the feeling, personally, that this was going to be an excuse to mass revive every single person that ever died in the DC Universe and say, no more death. So basically, I imagine something like this can happen, and they're going to show some repercussions, where these people in Blackest Night are going to end up being. It might be a good, worthwhile story. We'll just have to see.
All right. Wes?
I'm not happy about it, especially the fact that it's a bi-weekly series, and that means two books got to get dropped. That being said, we still don't know much. We know Mera and Ray Palmer are going to be in it, and there's going to be banners across all the DC titles, or a lot of DC titles, but that's not giving us much. I don't know, it feels kind of like, I think it was Sightings. It feels like that right now.
What happened to those?
We had like three of them.
We saw them, and then we did not see them afterwards.
Yeah. Like, I just hope this is, like, really planned out and necessary, because this feels like, oh, Blackest Night was so popular, it sold so much. Here, this is what we'll do to keep your interest instead of letting the DCU be at a firm place after a major event. They got to jump onto the next big thing instead of letting it calm down a little bit.
Andrew?
Well, I thought it was mostly inevitable, but I never saw the biweekly series on the horizon coming. I mean, that's kind of a surprise, but I think if Blackest Night is... I mean, people are complaining that it's not much about Green Lantern in the end. I think this will be even less about Green Lantern, so I'm not very excited about it. But I've always said, like, hey, if they were to make, like, a weekly or biweekly Green Lantern series, I would buy it. I'd be stoked for it. The possibilities doesn't quite sound like this is what it is. I mean, it's... I'll be surprised if there's even, like, a strong Green Lantern presence throughout it at all. So, overall feeling just a great big meh.
Yeah, they haven't announced any Green Lantern characters attached to it, right?
Nothing. None. Not a
nothing.
One. I mean, there's probably going to be some Color Brigade in there, but actual Green Lantern.
The New Guardians.
The Rainbow Police.
Rainbow yeah. Corps.
The Roy G. Biv's.
It's the, it's a surprise. Surprise, right? The bi-weekly, mostly. I mean, The Brightest Day has been not the biggest surprise in the world, just because everybody's been making fun of it since the Blackest Night has came out. So, you know what? It's been one of those things, like, you know, we thought it wouldn't happen, and yet here it is, and staring us in the face. So it's something that, you know, you thought was a joke, but it's coming to you in the forefront. Yeah, it's just people, something that makes me good.
People were swearing left and right that Geoff Johns had talked about The Brightest Day.
I know he has. I saw that article.
He never fucking did.
I read an article where he said it, damn it.
Sure he did.
Back in the
sure
day, he did. I have not seen a single shred to support that. And I've like been on top of all the interviews that have come up.
I don't know what happened to the link. I'm sorry.
It disappeared on you. He just vanished.
No, I mean, some information, whatever he does. Like that thing about how everybody thought Kyle was dead, but I swore to God that he had said at a convention that Kyle was going to talk Martian under down, even though he'd done it already. And I found the link, you know, like it exists. It very possible he meant something about A Brightest Day.
It's still one of those events where I still don't see, you know, Green Lanterns being at the forefront of it.
Like I said, I think...
Maybe we'll get more Green Lantern when it alternates with Justice League Generation Lost, the whole JLI thing. Yeah, maybe get Guy back at some point.
I don't know. I know Green Lantern's going to be in Justice League, and that's fine, I guess, except if you read Cry for Justice and realize that that's a terrible idea because that's, like, the writer behind it. But I think, I mean, at least what I said, I think technically Blackest Night now is a weekly event, and I think we're just going to get this over and over and over, you know, except we're going to have a lot more, I guess, masturbation, I guess, especially considering the Flash is going to be the forefront of a lot of the stories. You know, we're going to hear a lot of stories about how great characters are and they're not going to do anything. I actually don't think there's also, isn't there the idea being it's not a wide arc, it's just a story, it's just like, you know, there's not like, it's not going to, it's not...
Yeah.
26-ish leading to a story, it's just a series of stories.
That's kind of what I'm getting from it. Sort of a... It almost sounds like Countdown in premise. It's sort of the backbone of the new DCU is basically what they're saying without saying it.
But without switching writers so much.
Well, I prefer if it was serialized. I would prefer, and I am glad that Tomasi's on it, following John's... I mean, really, because, you know, I've made no bones about the fact that I think that The Core is the best comic, one of the best comics that DC's put out.
And it's better.
And I think it's just he's better at exploring the ideas introduced by the Green Lanterns than Geoff Johns is. Though Geoff Johns is obviously putting out a fair amount of ideas. So
he has a lot of ideas.
He's an excellent ideas man. I've said that since the beginning.
John's the setup guy and Tomasi's the go through guy.
Though I love Tomasi to death. I don't know if I've read anything that he's written besides Core that I thought was like amazing, you know.
Yeah, like Nightwing run.
Which would be interesting to see. I'd love to see I'd love to see what he could do, like, without Johns, like, yanking his...
Well, Nightwing's what killed me. Nightwing, he had a bunch of his own ideas for Nightwing, and I wasn't really happy with that, but I haven't been happy with Nightwing since Evan Grayson left, so I'm...
Well, let's move on to the rest of the news. See what Green Lantern Films gets two new members, and it may be in 3D. Let's see, two new talents have been reported as in talks for roles in the upcoming Green Lantern film. Peter... How you say it? Pronounce it.
Sarsgaard. Sure.
I thought it's Skarsgård.
Yeah.
It's
Nordic, so you don't really say K, I think.
So okay. Oh. Peter Skarsgård is said to be close to signing on as Hector Hammond, and director Martin Campbell has mentioned that Sherlock Holmes star Mark Strong is in talks to play Sinestro.
And Blake Lively is cast as Carol Ferris.
Yes.
Yeah.
Blake Lively has been cast as Carol Ferris, so that was confirmed. Also, Martin Campbell is not filming the Green Lantern film with 3D in mind, but mentioned that the studio will probably have those talks with him in post-production.
Wait. So, did you just say Mark Hamill?
Martin Campbell. He's just talking fast.
Yeah, I was just to say, what, Mark Campbell?
I could totally see some 3D embellishments in there if they were to do Green Lantern.
Why not? I mean, you know.
It seems like the material.
Space foray, you know, it has to.
The material lends itself well, I think.
Yeah, it'll blend well with a good 3D studio to make, you know, to make most of these things come to life. I mean, one of the things to, you know, to see in this film is, you know, how they're going to portray most of these alien, you know, alien beings that they have, or Oa itself,
or the constructs even.
Yeah, Hal Jordan actually giving you a hand job. It's an awesome idea.
Exactly.
I think Blake Lively, I don't want to get into her. I feel like either something's wrong with her. I don't know. I think she's, to me, the kind of like 21-year-old that seems to have had a lot of work done on her face that I'm not really proud of as a human being. But I think she's also way too young for the part, because I think Carol, one of the things that's interesting about Carol, she always seems kind of older because she runs a business. But now it's kind of like, my high school daughter runs a business. You crazy? You know, and I'm not really into that, especially considering she's supposed to have a romantic relationship with Hector Hammond and Ryan Reynolds. And Ryan Reynolds is like young looking, you know, but it's mostly just because he's effeminate. Like he's
was that
got at least
script?
10 years on her.
Have you read the script for the first draft of the Green Lantern script?
No, I guess I'm trying to, I don't know, no.
Unless they added that, the romance from, you know.
The Hector Hammond scene?
Then there's no romance in the script.
Oh, well, that's cool, I guess. That's good.
I agree with you, but I do have faith that, I'm sure there was screen tests with Reynolds and stuff, and they would have gone into this knowing that she could do it. I mean, pull it off.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I have faith in that kind of, because I mean, Natalie Portman, Hayden Christensen had a lot of chemistry and stuff too, and that's no way that's a huge big deal movie. But yeah, yeah. I mean, I don't know. I think she's just a little too young for the part. I really, what it is, I prefer them to get somebody a little older.
Yeah.
I mean, I would agree with you there, just because when I first heard that, you know, Blake Lively was picked for the role, the first thing that jumps to mind is that she looks way too young to be Carol Ferris to Ryan Reynolds' Hal Jordan.
Yeah. I don't usually like dream casting stuff, but I mean, something like Jennifer Connelly would be a little better, you know.
That's going a little too old, I think. As much as I love the actress, I think. No, she's awesome.
She did sometimes.
Give her the right script, give her the right movie, she's a good actor.
Well, you gotta think about the fact that if this is successful, the idea is they cast younger people because they want the people to be doing the movies for the next 10 years, you know?
Exactly.
And that's right. Why they cast somebody like Ryan Reynolds, who's always gonna look like that until he's like 50, and Tobey Maguire is always like he's 16.
Ladies tend to get less mileage out of age in general.
Yeah, they look a little, yeah. And, I mean, what's the deal with, I didn't realize Hector Hammond was gonna be the villain. I guess that's kinda cool, I would've preferred
it's
a more cosmic...
Villain.
I thought they.
He's a character in the movie, but there's no talk that he is
basically a supporting villain. Legion is the main villain, and Sinestro is there in a non-villainous role.
But I swear he just said, "I'm trying not to get spoiled."
Wait,
who knows what the current script is? But that's what it was, and it was.
The first draft of the script had Legion in the film, and then you know, Sinestro would be a member of the Corps and not evil.
Legion?
And Hector Romano would just have a co-starring fill in this role in the film, but he probably won't be the main villain.
I like Mark Strong as Sinestro. I think that's pretty good.
Honestly, after seeing Sherlock Holmes, you know, not that long ago, and seeing that, I have been told that Mark Strong was going to play the Sinestro character, he does not portray a bad villain. So,
yeah. I think he's a little too typecast, one note.
Yep.
And everything I've seen him in, he's very, very forceful personality, kind of like that, which is fine. I think he's cast perfectly. I just think he's a little too cast perfectly, you know?
I think he's going to be the villain in Kick-Ass, and it's like, I wonder if he knows that he's being typecast. Like,
yeah,
he's not.
He reads the script, he goes, oh, this guy's just a, you know, sort of control freak. I could play that. Second film comes in, you're a villain.
I mean,
he's like, oh, I thought that part where I tied up the protagonist and killed him wasn't very villainous. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Again, if it's fine, I think, like I said, I mean, I don't know. The perfect guy to play, you know, the perfect tone they should be going for with Sinestro was Victor Garber from the animated series. And I mean, he had a lot. I mean, Mark Strong, I don't know. I've not seen him play any. He's done a lot of movies, and I probably have seen him lying around, but I haven't seen him do anything where he's relatively pleasant. I'd like to see him do relatively pleasant, you know.
So you want to see him do, like, happy, smart, frolic in the wind type.
Just
role.
The kind of, I mean, everything I've seen him in, he's been diabolical, and it's kind of like, I mean, you know, I know the guy's name is Sinister, and his, you know, his name might as well be Evil-O or whatever, but I mean, I don't know. I mean,
Evil-O.
Well, again, as you said before, he's been perfectly chosen for the role. You just want to see him in other You just want him to actually have ability to branch away from that, from those roles.
Yeah,
hey, well, he's technically not going to be very villainous in this movie, so there you go.
Hey, if John's wrote it, he could have been Atrocitus.
Atrocitus, you mean?
Whatever the word is.
Natural.
I'm interested in the idea of them bringing in Hector Hammond as a supporting character, and I think it just kind of pulls away that they want to use a classical Green Lantern villain, but there aren't really that many good ones that aren't, like, Sinestro, you know? I mean,
who else are we going to pick? Evil Star? Sonar? Pizza.
I mean, you know.
Goldface?
I like Gold. No, I don't like Goldface. Goldface, his face is gold and he turns people into gold. Doesn't that seem a little like you're not naming yourself appropriately? Couldn't you be Midas or something? Just Goldface? It's not. Got lazy.
Goldfinger.
Alright, let's actually move to reviews. We're going to move into Blackest Night, Wonder Woman number 2. I'm going to start with Mew. Mew, start, go off.
Wonder Woman number 2?
Yes.
Alrighty then. What can you say about the issue that can't be said about anything else? Pretty much nothing. Basically, what happens in the issue can be amounted to dream sequence. Basically, rather than kill anyone or do anything relevant after a fight with Mera, she basically goes into dream sequence by Aphrodite and is promptly killing her friends, kissing a randomly returned Bruce, and then gets a violet ring thanks to the goddess of love. It's kind of disappointing that the main problem was that nothing happened, really, if you think about it. It's all just dream sequenced away. Aside from the transformation, of course, which we already saw in Blackest Night. I mean, the art was good, and the story accomplished what it had to accomplish, but it's kind of irritating that they just kind of like, just like, nothing happened, nothing happened. I'll give it a C-.
Okay. West.
I guess I have to give that a little higher because I enjoy Scott's art more than I did in the previous issue. But he's, like Colton said, nothing happened, but I knew that going in, so it didn't bring down the issue as much for me. What I didn't like is the fact that it was a dream sequence. So, of course, I was one of the people who got confused whether it was Dick or Bruce initially who was kissing her, because that's a very thin-looking Bruce Wayne, and it's just, I don't know, it was a very meh issue, but the art was solid. And I knew what I was getting into with it being a tie-in that's taking place in this little closet area. There's some questions that I would ask, but I'll save that for the discussion. I'll give it a C+.
C+, Eric.
I'm gonna say I'm probably gonna circulate around C+. But I really like this issue. I think I don't get a chance to talk about the first issue, but the first issue I think was really good. It was basically the same thing. It was very simplistic and straightforward, but it demonstrated a lot of things that really worked about Wonder Woman and how her ideology is very specific and very strong, and that's kind of what pushes the character versus every other character, especially in a Geoff Johns kind of universe where we see a lot of forced ideologies and stuff. And this really worked for me, this issue. I think it's cool that you got to see Wonder Woman and Mera fight. It was cool to see Mera do some waterbending as opposed to just waving that trident around like she's been doing. And it was also nice to the fight kind of pointed out that, yeah, Mera really wouldn't have a chance against Wonder Woman, you know? I think it's cool, too, that the story plays out that Wonder Woman was able to break the hold of it at least a little bit before the big vision by Aphrodite. I think it becomes obvious as a dream sequence. I think they spend, absolutely agree, they spend too much time in the dream sequence. That kind of ruins the issue. As a big Wonder Woman fan, I do appreciate that she's getting this kind of focus and this kind of storyline, and especially that it makes a lot of ideological sense. I liked the art. I think some of it is hard to tell where the artist switched because there were two artists in the issue. And I think Nicholas Scott's art's really interesting because it goes right on the line of being great and terrible. Like, it could be if she's inked inappropriately by, like, one person, it would look like absolute garbage. But it looked really good in this issue. I think Wonder Woman's dialogue was badass. And I think my biggest problem with the issue is Batman getting a huge splash page making out with Wonder Woman. Because I think Batman's all over the world, got so much crap going on, that I think to shoehorn Wonder Woman overcoming the Black Lantern with love, being like the implication being her true love is Batman or something, I think it really diminishes her as a character. I think DC should be focusing on separating her as a character. So it's almost like this issue took two steps forward and then two steps back. And I also want to point out that I think Wonder Woman's costume looks like a Super Saiyan Magic Saiyan Man? What do they call, Frank, the Mighty Morphin type shows in Japan?
Super Sentai?
Super Sentai. It's a Super Sentai costume, except, you know, with it seems like she's wearing less clothes than before, though I know that's not true. Overall, I guess I'll give it a C. I did like, again, that, again, character-driven, interesting, too much time spent on an obvious dream sequence, and the art was pretty solid, but I want to give it around a C+, just because I like how it's pushing the character. But I'm going to say C, because I think they diminish it automatically with the Wonder Woman-Batman thing.
Andrew?
I really enjoyed it. I mean, they kind of painted themselves into a corner as far as what they could tell in this, just given the time frame. What else could they have really done, aside from just, you know, show what happens to her as she breaks the hold of the ring at this point in time? Because the last issue, she was basically going to the fray, and we already see what happens in the fray in Blackest Night, the main mini. But I thought it kind of... Anyway, it better sells the whole thing in the Blackest Night with the black ring shattering, and oh, now she's got a purple ring. It better sells that to me as a reader. Didn't have a big problem with the Batman splash. I've always kind of enjoyed the dalliance in JLA and such with their romance that never quite materializes, but it's kind of like there, and they kind of tease the readers with it. But I'm of the mind that if they're never going to have the balls to do that, to actually explore a relationship of any kind with those two, then don't fucking tease us with shit like this. But
really quick,
sure, go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, I think I agree with that too. I think that's a great story idea. I just think my problem with it is it's always explored in Wonder Woman comics and JLA comics, but you never see Wonder Woman. You never see Batman sitting in the Batcave going like, "I'd like to get a piece of that." Like, you know, he never goes. It's always Wonder Woman being like, "I want to get on him so bad," and the JLA being like, "They should be together, right?" And Batman's like, "I got other people on my mind." You know, like that's.
Like 20 and like at least 14 hours of his life is spending on whether the Joker is killing someone right now. At least 8 hours of Wonder Woman's life in her own book is whether she wants to jump on Batman's bones.
Yeah,
it's not Batman's fault. He's too busy screaming that his parents are dead.
It's his parents who died. Andrew, continue what you were saying.
Yeah,
That's about all I got for the issue. I really liked the art. I liked Nicola Scott. You know, until Eric mentioned there was two pencilers, I got it in front of me now. Yeah. I didn't even realize there was two pencilers.
Me either. I had to look it up. I said,
Nicola Scott and Eduardo Pansica.
I was about to catch Erica. I was going to be like, no, there's not. Here, oh. But, except I did not like the last page, and it's with her in the sapphire outfit. I like the way Rice draws it. But it's all wrong, and it's accented by, on the left page, you know, you got the ad for the Blackest Night, the ones to come, and it's like, oh, that's how it's properly drawn, and it's, it didn't help. It didn't help.
That's how it's supposed to look. Oh, wait.
No, I think that's weird, too. I think there's this subtle difference in the way Nicola Scott draws even the Black Lantern Wonder Woman costume. I kind of like them better. I think it looks like there's more detail involved. I don't know.
Nicola Scott.
I liked her Black Lantern outfit in this one, and I liked how they kind of let her get a little bit devilish in the Black Lantern. Mm-hmm. It made the most of it. I mean, if it wasn't for this issue, we wouldn't even practically have any Black Lantern, Wonder Woman in the whole thing, aside from...
Yeah, this would have been better to introduce this concept here instead of the actual Blackest Night miniseries.
Right. Yeah, I agree. I'd give this issue altogether probably like just a flat B.
All right. B, that's actually... you know what? Getting into the issue, I enjoyed it very much. It was... It was good. I agree with many of the points that Eric said. I agree with many of the points Andrew said. Nicola Scott artwork and also Eduardo Pansica, or however you pronounce his name, did a good job. The funny thing about it, the one thing I want to mention is apparently just because no one would allow Wonder Woman's costume ever to change in the mainstream, because her costume will always remain the same no matter what. Apparently, becoming
it's
a black
tweaks,
huh?
There's been a few tweaks
here and there, but it never strays that far from the
original.
Yeah,
actually, every writer, that starts on that title asks to change the costume in DC always.
It used to be a skirt and shit.
Originally it was a skirt, but now it's like a freaking like thong or whatever.
And they tweaked it since.
Well, it used to be a thong. In the 90s, it was a thong.
Yeah, now
they tweaked it since when they redid it after Infinite Crisis, she got more of an eagle design and she got seen.
Got the pinstripes in the front and shit,
right,
and
like, yeah.
W on the belt.
The point I'm getting across is like every time, like now, because she, you know, they say that she's a Black Lantern, she's allowed to have a different costume, and when she becomes a Star Sapphire, they pretty much have the same motif. It's pretty much they're giving her that like forehead guard thing, and that whole both of them have that forehead guard thing, which I'm wondering is like apparently every artist wants her to have that forehead guard thing, which is like Even I want that forehead guard thing.
Oh, now. You're talking about like the Spartan CR? Type design?
Yeah, Spartan design thing.
Yeah, Frank Miller drew that in Dark Knight Strikes Again. Yeah, I really like that. Right. I think she should have that. The sideburns. I think that's a really good idea.
Okay.
Yeah, I really like the designs here, but again, it's gonna be gone after the event's over. So that's a sad thing to know. Aside from that, the way it was written and the fact that it was a dream sequence sort of, it throws me off for most of the book just because, I guess everybody's, gets into the fact that, her and Mara fighting happened. But to me, every time I look at it and then I look at Blackest Night, the book itself, apparently that dream sequence for me started the moment Mara said, "It's on, bitch." And then everything froze. And then Wonder Woman just had a giant dream sequence. And then she's like, "Oh my God, I love everything again." And now I'm a Star Sapphire. That's how I saw it.
No, Mara's got that mark on her nose, so some of the issue must have happened.
To me, it just seems like she got scuffed up with like a punch or something, and that's about it. But again,
some dirt got on her nose.
Yeah, some dirt got on her nose, and that's about it. Like from then on, everything was a dream sequence. The giant dream sequence. They're like the water bending, which may have been the dream sequence. I like this, her getting speared, which may have been the dream sequence.
I mean, is it really a dream sequence, though, in the strictest sense of the words? I mean, it seems like she was more of a present somewhere outside of time.
I think the fight with Mara was a dream sequence. I'm not a dream sequence, but I think when she flew away...
When she killed Cassie, when Donna showed up, also all of that was never happened.
I think as soon as she left the dock, that's when it was...
She tries to cut off her hand, I think, right after
After she gets stabbed in the back, I think that's when...
There's no real clear indication when it actually occurs.
No, I think it's as soon as... I think the idea... There's nothing that happens up until when Donna Troy shows up that it all would be something that couldn't be happening. Like,
right. She was until she knocks out Donna, then it's
Mara has the same injuries. I mean, Frank's right that geographically it doesn't make any sense, and it's unfortunate that the crossover is not planned properly. But within the context of the story, she fought Mara, she kicked her ass, she flew away, she tried to cut off her hand, and then Aphrodite gave her a vision that let her break the ring.
It can be seen that way. It can be seen that way, but...
I guess you can do whatever you want.
So, you know what? I give the book itself, I give it about a C+, a B-. I enjoy it. From there on, we're going to move on to, Blackest Night Flash number 2, the book we've all eagerly been waiting for, with All Will Be Well. All will be well, Brandon. All will be well. You know, I'm going to start with you, Brandon. Flash fan and all. Tell me what you think about Blackest Night Flash number 2.
I have extremely mixed feelings on this book. Love Scott Collins. I thought the art was great. It was to the T, the blood, the ripped clothes, the stuff flying everywhere. It was Scott Collins. He still needs a new colorist, but it was still great, gritty Scott Collins. What I don't like is that it's less Flash and it's less Rogues. It's like it's not completely 50-50, and it's like, Jeff, you need to pick one. You need to make this about Barry, or you need to make this about the Rogues, because you're not doing either of them justice. And
justice.
Cry for justice.
I cry for justice.
I just lied. We need justice.
That being said, the whole Blue Lantern thing is just ridiculous. Like I said, when reading Blackest Night 6, it was like, oh, this is terrible. And to see that in a Flash book and subjecting Scott to have to draw Saint Walker is just wrong.
I felt embarrassed for them.
I felt embarrassed for myself for having to buy the book. It's like,
have a nice cover.
It was a great cover. Wait, which cover are you talking about?
I don't think it was.
My problem with the cover is that it looks like Captain Cold's scared of them, but they're really happy to see Captain Cold. they're like, yeah, let's go party. He's like, no.
I thought it was a nice cover. Wrapping it up, it is a good issue. I enjoyed it for the most part. The little All Will Be Well over and over and over again is lame, and I actually told myself, if he says it again, I'm going to rip out a page. He did not say it. My book is intact. Yeah, I have to give it a C minus, only because I had high hopes for this, but it just did not live up to it at all.
Mew?
Alrighty, let's kick things off. The issue at hand, the Blue Flash issue. What can one say that West is not already said, buried, screamed at, cursed at, and burned? To put it simply, I gotta admit the whole All Will Be Well thing is starting to run thin. Although, admittedly, it is cool to see Barry starting to use constructs and stuff, and I think, personally, it would be awesome just seeing him run at someone at the speed of light and just ram a construct right into their face. But, yeah, not much happens. It's kind of, the problem is they kind of split the thing between the two, like Wes was saying, and it's a balance issue. I mean, you want to get the best you can for both characters. I mean, does that mean you give less to one and more to the other and you tighten it up, or... I'm not certain about that one, but... I'm interested in both sides. I just think they just didn't balance it all that well. That and Wally's kind of a weird little Blue Flash thing.
Wally?
Huh? I mean, sorry, Barry.
Okay. You're excused.
He's kind of just doing this All Will Be Well thing repeatedly. It's like, I want to see him make a little Flash version of that. At least to make it a little bit different so he doesn't start screaming right next to St. Walker like some kind of tribute band. And St. Walker looks weird in the art style. I agree.
He does.
There's something off about him. I just can't quite put my finger on it, though.
His eyes are really close together. He looks kind of like he has Down syndrome or something.
His head is longer.
And his fishtail on the head.
He's really happy in that first page.
All Will Be Well, apparently. So, you know, that's pretty good to be happy about.
You know, because I always figured that the way St. Walker's drawn is it's not... His head isn't necessarily always really wobbly. It's kind of more like an alien head, but it's a little wobbly towards the end, you know, where it's always rigid. Like, most people seem to draw him kind of sometimes with the tentacle wobbly. It looks like this is wobbly more than everybody else. That makes any sense?
Yeah. I get what you're saying.
Why does he have a tentacle on his head?
Stiff. It's stiff.
Bone. It's firm.
It's firm.
It's ribbed for her pleasure.
It's direct. Time to move on.
Yeah, it's very much time to move on, you two. So.
Okay.
Moving on to the score, I'd give it a B minus. I mean, there were some points I really liked about it, and then there are other points where it's like kind of questionable. But at least it wasn't a dream sequence.
All right.
I'm bitter.
Yeah. I obviously hated this issue. I think comparing this to Wonder Woman. Is the Blackest Night Flash miniseries and the Blackest Night Wonder Woman miniseries is really apt because both miniseries are overall pointless. We're not really getting anything out of it. It's just supposed to develop the individual stories of characters that aren't getting enough screen time. Doesn't make any sense. Again, the event is essentially a Flash event at this point, so he doesn't need extra screen time. But you can see the difference. What both issues do is they have wandering, they have random action, they extend what really should be a one-panel incident into like a three-issue miniseries. And whether Wonder Woman is actually focusing on character development, ideology, and reaffirmation of character, and really, really trying to establish like a different perspective and dealing with the events as they're happening and stuff, this is just not, you know. Geoff Johns is, instead of doing any character development, he's just having characters state things over and over and over. I don't understand why the blue guys could all of a sudden make constructs when they really haven't interacting with the
green. Where's the Green Lantern that needs to be close to them for them to be effective?
Yeah, and Barry keeps trying to take the ring. Tries to take the ring off of Bart. The rules aren't established enough if that would work. As far as we can tell, that doesn't actually work. They've tried it a million times. Why is he still trying to do the same thing?
Has Barry tried it before? That's the question.
Well, I mean, I feel like, didn't he try to grab it off of them? I don't know. And even then, he must have seen what was going on. I know this is all taking place in the span of 3 minutes, even though it's taking 6 months for us, but like, you know, what's really going on? I guess I sort of appreciate that he had that page that explained a little better why Barry was chosen as Hope, considering he's been nothing but cynical since he's come back. But my biggest problem with the issue, and I was talking about this earlier to some other people, is the early part in the issue, and it seems nitpicky, but I think it just kind of points to Geoff Johns' lack of good sense of ideas, but lack of imagination the way the story should play out. That Mirror Master falls for the trick by the Mirror Master that he always plays on other people, where the Mirror Master's like, I'm going to attack you from the mirror. He's like, and Mirror Master's like, no, as long as I smash this mirror, you'll be dead. And then all of a sudden the mirror attacks, like, oh, why didn't I realize that was going to happen? Because that happens every single friggin' time I do that to somebody else, you know? Like, why does he think he's going to die when he shoots the mirror? Has he not ever dealt with his own gimmick before, you know? And there's a lot of that happening in this issue. And you know, somebody had mentioned the other night that Captain Cold is giving off no emotional state, and yet he's always mad and always wanting to kill people. And if he has no emotions whatsoever, why does he care about walking, you know? And why are we given a splash page of breaking Golden Glider's ankle when these guys have been torn to shreds and have come back and stuff? It's just very much not getting any kind of impact out of this, and I'm not really interested in the Rogues as characters. I think Captain Cold's whole, like, I'm such a badass because I can conveniently shoot people with my ice gun thing is done to death. I think this is not doing a good job of selling Barry, and I think, if anything, this is just, this specific miniseries is pointing out how obnoxious Geoff Johns' reign over the DC is going to be in the next year or two.
What are you going to give it as a grade, Eric?
F.
Okay.
Oh, you know what? Scott Collins drew it. It's pretty good. D.
Okay. A step up because Scott Collins. Andrew.
I completely agree with everything Eric said. I don't know if I'd give it quite that low of a grade. I'd give it a... I'll get this out of the way right now. I'll give it a D+. D isn't dog shit, but... No, I didn't like the issue at all. And this is one of those things where it's like, if I was really a Flash fan, if I was familiar and into the Rogues, I'd probably be able to better gauge this kind of an issue, but I'm not. But what's here, I don't like. I don't like the art one bit. I thought the art and depiction of Barry as a Blue Lantern, which is pretty much the whole selling point here, is laughable and shameful. And yeah, where's the Green Lantern that has to be there to make the Blue Ring work? I don't see any Green Lanterns. There's no Green Lanterns here.
He's still in the graveyard, though. So, I mean, they're nearby.
No, as far as, I don't think we've ever seen Blue Lanterns make constructs.
We have in the past.
We saw the Catman.
For John Stewart during Raids of the
Red Lantern. Oh, yeah, they made Hulk constructs.
Raids of the Red Lanterns.
Yeah.
But again, a Green Lantern was present right next to him at the time.
Well, who says they have to be holding hands? I mean, the they could just be in that vicinity.
The ideological premise is supposed to be that they hope, but they don't have any will to act on that hope, so they need will to act on their hope, and by having hope, they give the people with will more will. So, I mean, the idea being hope by itself doesn't do anything. That's supposed to be the idea. Plus, I agree, Barry having a ring and making constructs is an awesome concept that really a lot can be done with. But basically, Geoff Johns' biggest problem with, you know, the Flash is that he doesn't take advantage of the Flash. The fact that the Flash is super fast. Why isn't he doing anything super fast in this issue, you know? He's just punching and kicking people.
Super fast.
Yeah. And I think West was talking about, I think it was West, one of you guys, talking about how Geoff Johns should decide, is this about the Rogues? Is this about Barry? I think... one step beyond that. I think it should be... why should this even be about one of those two? Why does it have to be about Barry? I mean, it's... at all. Yeah. It's... I understand, like, the Flash Rebirth, okay, it kind of needs to be about Barry, because it's about reasserting him into the DC Universe. I get that. It's fine. But in this, in the middle of Blackest Night, it's a Flash tie-in. Why does it have to be about Barry? I mean, it's...
Yeah, isn't Max back from the dead? Aren't all these characters are back from the dead? We could really be dealing with more of that.
And we get a little bit of Wally, but it's like... why isn't there more of an even split here? Why is Barry being pushed for just no discernible reason?
Well, he's already juggling the Rogues and Barry, and he's struggling with that. So
take the Rogues out of it. I don't care about
I don't care about the Rogues.
No, it's too much history to avoid. That's like ignoring Alex and ignoring Jade when you're playing with Kyle.
I mean, did the Batman miniseries have to bring in Arkham Asylum to be complete? I mean, no. It's just make it about the main character or characters. And
can you remind me, what are the Rogues doing there again?
they're
taking care of business because that's what Rogues do.
You got to remember John's original run on Flash was run away. The Rogues. That was
I know the Rogues
catch.
Are a big part of his run. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Apparently what the Rogues are doing in this title itself is apparently saying to themselves, the dead are rising.
Our
own dead Rogues will probably come back and try to kill us now. So we're not going to turn back. We're going to go after them.
Yeah, Rogues never run. I don't understand. Is this, like, this is obviously, like, they don't run anymore, right? Like, that was
I think we had a series about them specifically running.
Yeah, on the run.
And, like, honestly, I think the whole Fraternity of Rogues thing, unless I'm mistaken, came about when Mark Waid was writing it with Brian Augustine, and he had that there was multiple Captain Colds, and you found out that there was, like, a whole kind of underground network of these Rogues and stuff. Geoff Johns, it seems to be, they all seem homeless and just go from fight to fight, depending on the crossover. That's what the Rogues seem to do now with Geoff Johns. So that's not development, you know. It's not,
They have home. It's just not very home.
Man, not feeling them at all.
How do you have an issue where it's ideologically pushed to the point where faith and hope are going to get you through any dark time, and yet we're supposed to be chuckling because of the first page an injured guard is murdered by the protagonist?
Actually, we should be talking about this in the discussion portion, and we still haven't let Andrew finish yet.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry.
That's all I got. I mean, Eric did an excellent job of summing up all of my feelings. All right. I don't see any need to reiterate those, but D. What did I say? D plus.
I thought you said B as
in.
No,
he gave it a D. But no, D said, plus as in dog shit.
As in dog shit. Yeah.
So pretty much moving into my little take on the book. You know what? It's true. It's being split into the faction of Blue Flash and then the Rogues. He should either kept it as one story or kept it as none of the above and just give us something else, because we already see Barry doing his thing. Fair enough, and then outside of his own title here. So to be honest, when the book actually started and we had the Rogues, I thought it was gonna stick with the Rogues, and then I got Blue Lantern Barry Allen running around saying all will be well, and I was sort of turned to a loop here because I didn't know what to think of it. When Wally showed up for like a split second only to do what apparently Barry did not think about doing to Black Lantern Reverse Flash, and was like, I'm going to destroy everything Adams. I don't know why Barry didn't think of this before.
Yo, that's Wally's move.
Yeah, Wally's move was like, I destroy things by punching through
it. People to fuck up.
Barry's thing is, it's going to be passive and throw them clear across country.
Yo, Wally's a man, by the way.
Wally was a man. And to be honest, I would have liked this book to be actually about Wally looking at Barry as a Blue Lantern going like, what the hell just happened here?
That would be interesting. Like, see that through Wally's eyes.
Better to give
that would have
Wally
been compelling.
a little push here, because he's not going to get his title now. Or
right. What's the harm in doing that now? I mean, in a few months, you're going to have Flash, the ongoing series with Barry. What are they even doing
in the graveyard?
What are they still doing in this graveyard? Fighting these...
They can move at light speed, just run past everybody. Like, there's no one in the DC Universe as fast as all the Flashes together. Like, that's ridiculous. Yeah,
so... Well, he just got his ring, so of course he's going to be in the graveyard, because
that's
the
battle. Barry. Wally could have been doing 3-4 different things at this time.
Flush Necron, man. Fucking hell.
Well, so again, I give this issue a solid D. I'm not giving it above anything, just because it could have gone. It could have been the book itself could have been something. The story itself wasn't anything, and the fact that it was Geoff Johns does not know what to do here with both the Rogues and Blue Lantern Barry Allen gives me not a good feeling about the third chapter of this book and the closing chapter for the Black Knight, the Flash. So I give it a solid D. So, moving on from all these to the big finale. The big, great Green Lantern Corps number 44, where, our German crazy Guy Gardner, our recently returned from the dead Kyle Rayner, comes, football star here, comes, to, deliver the touchdown. What do we think about this issue? We're going to start with, Eric.
Oh, yeah? I not make any secret that I think Green Lantern Corps is an awesome, awesome title, and I think this issue was awesome. I mean, I think at this point I'm probably a fanboy, because even problems with it I'm kind of glossing over. I think my main problems with this obviously are the fact that when Mogo uses his ability, it seems like obviously out of nowhere. I think it's a logical point to take the story to, but it does seem kind of out of nowhere. And it seems kind of like, why didn't they just do that in the first place as soon as all this started? But even then, like, I think this Green Lantern Corps storyline really proves that this is what Space Epic should be like. I mean, everything that's happening, is huge. Like, everything that's happening is spaced out. I think it's amazing that we got a double splash page. I hate those, but the fact that the battery fell down was epic, and it was treated as what it should have been, epic. That's how you pace a story. And then how the next page, all they were dealing with was debris flying at 200 miles an hour. I thought that was great. I think that's the kind of thing you should really think about. Like, think about any good action sequence in a movie, and it's not just because two attractive men are punching each other and talking about hope and will and faith and a higher being and stuff. It's because some cool shit is happening, and that's really what we're getting out of this, I think I love that Kyle's taking charge. I love that he's actually doing things like, getting everybody focused on the one thing, like when he's like, oh, everybody attack on my mark or whatever. I like how when Kyle is restraining Guy, he can't help but make little tiny Lilliputians holding him down and stuff. I think that's pretty cool. I think the whole conflict with Guy is good. I like that Vanth. I like that they're using points of like story logic where Vanth tries to stop him. You know, I like watching Guy wreck people like Arkilla was doing in the Sinestro Corps War. I think there's some really awesome like throwaway pictures in here too. Like after the debris field hits, you see Kilowog's face leaning against Artegia's thigh. It's just an awesome picture of Kilowog. There's another picture of Salak towards the end where they're discussing the Purge, where his fist is like hardcore up in your face, and it's great. I think it's great. I like how the story plays out. I like everything about it. I think Gleason is awesome here. I don't care how many inkers he has. Just give him 4,000 more if this is the kind of work he's going to produce. I think it's a logical way kind of to defeat the Black Lanterns. It's yet another way to defeat the Black Lanterns, and I like that the story... It's unfortunate that these characters are not involved in the more epic storyline, but what's great about these characters being so separate is that they're telling what is in and of itself a great, complete story that is very satisfying. I want to deduct points, but I think just for the, I think compared to everything else that's going on in Blackest Night, the thing's got to get an A.
All right. Solid A from Eric. Mew.
I'm going to give it an A plus if anybody else gives it a little grade.
Mew.
All right. The epic pressure of you. Folks, gotta make Eric proud. Okay, moving along. Issue itself is a really awesome issue. I mean, this is the kind of epic space battle that we need. We have the old issues on OO. We finally get to see what Mogo's been intending to do with this whole Blackest Night thing. We get to see his epic gravity pump just like rip everything off the planet. It's like, holy shit. And then we got the battery falling. We got Guy Gardner running around with chainsaws made out of hate energy. And it's just like, just about every moment of this issue was freaking awesome. I mean, I gotta agree with Eric. This is why Green Lantern Corps is such an awesome series. You always find something interesting and new and epic about the series during each battle. And we get to see all the different lanterns interacting, and I just love that. We finally get to see a way to at least, for the rest of Blackest Night, take care of these Black Lanterns who are just ripping apart the battery by basically just sucking him in and personally burning them to death until they finally purge the battery, which is just a really brutal way to kill them all off. I mean, we can see why Mogo doesn't socialize now, because he's too busy thinking about how he's going to kill everyone with his gravity. I mean, damn. It's a solid issue. I enjoy it, and I can't wait for the next one when we finally get to see some resolution between Guy and Kyle over the Red Ring. I gotta give it an A+. It was just a damn awesome issue in both art and writing.
A and A plus. West.
Yeah, Mew's right. I'm going A plus too.
Two A pluses.
Did you see the part where Artegia is gouging out the eyes of Tomar Ray? That's fucking awesome. I'm sorry. That's fucking awesome.
West, Tomar Ray, eye gouging out. What you got?
It's two Tomar Ray eye gouges.
What you got?
Two.
Yeah.
I got a good issue. I don't think it was A plus worthy, but it was really good. It was really good. I thought this was Gleason's best art ever, like since the Aquaman days. Like, this was really good issue. Like Eric said, if he needs 1,000 more inkers, give it to him, because this was great. What I didn't like about the issue, the whole Mogul thing, it seems really, really out of left field. And I'm still the only one thinking this, but how is it that this is going to end? They're so far away from the main storyline that if the Black Lanterns were to just like come back and die and just fall out of the sky, they wouldn't know why, because everything is happening so far away from them. It's just so separated from the Blackest Night storyline that it takes me out of this whole event. But for the issue itself, it was nice. The scenes between Kyle and Guy were great. The anvil and the whatever that was, the double weapon thing, that was great. Good. It's nice to see Tomasi making use of the Red Ring. Guys spitting out little needles and stuff. I wish there was a little more blood, but it was great. A minus for the Mogul crap.
Wow, we got three A's across the board. Andrew, what do you have?
Well, to add on what West was saying, I think I agree it's a little bit hard to figure out how they're going to rejoin the main battle in Blackest Night, but I was thinking, like, if Hal is going to become Parallax, and he is, they kind of have to join the main battle, because Hal is going to need Kyle's battery to do the Four Musketeers yank out Parallax thing.
You so wish. I guess that's,
I don't know. But yeah, I really like the issue. If it was based on the story alone, I'd give it an A+. But it's a very, very breezy read. I counted the splash pages. There's 8. That's a lot in a book that's, wow, what, 22 pages?
Right? Yeah, that is a lot.
It's a lot. I mean, this is like what I would give Geoff Johns shit about, you know, Secret Origin. It's at that level. So I have to grade a little bit harshly in that regard. I like the art. It's cool. I like that the colorist is kind of, he's picked up Moose's old tricks with the energy wisps and shit like that, like you see in the Gardner Double Splash. I think that's cool. I like Kyle taking charge. And there's very little I didn't like about the issue, just the simple fact that it's a breezy read. It's too quick to read, and it's just splash page after splash page after splash page. Didn't have a problem with the Mogo thing. Thought that was kind of cool, even though it's kind of like a little too convenient. But obviously I would rather them move on from this as soon as possible, get back to the main fight if that's what they're going to do, and you know, just the sooner the better on that, because this is, it's like one big glorified isolated incident, and it's time to move on. That's about all I got. Yeah, that's all I got. I give it, based on the art and just the breeziness, I give it a B-. I would like to give it an A+, but I can't.
We had almost a perfect across the board there. But you know what? You know, I have to give it it has to be awesome to me. It was a great issue. And, you know, overall, following, you know, every issue that's come out for Blackest Night, Green Lantern Core, reading consecutively, if you read it consecutively, it's just a great overall running story. It's just, you know, it's just a great isolated incident with the Green Lantern Core that technically has the rest of everything else pushing itself into it. And to be honest, it's just handled so well here. In this issue is handled really well, as Eric was saying. All the epic scope, everything's going down. You know, Kyle giving everyone, you know, marching orders. Van telling him that, you know, you can't go after, you know, can't go after Guy because he's our greatest secret weapon. Kyle having no shit of this. The battery falling down. The moment between Guy and Kyle, you know, the whole "I can't do it, man, I can't do it." This thing's taking over. Kyle's like, "You got to do it, man. You're my running buddy. You're my pal." He's like, "No. It's such great moments there." And then even when Mogo shows up, it's like, you know, it's sure, it's like sort of left field, but I mean, he's a part of the book. He's part of Green Lantern Corps, so you have to see him. He's a part of the main cast. I mean, he's been a part of the main cast since, like, you know, the first since Recharge. So he's seeing him in the book wasn't a stretch, and seeing him actually doing what he did wasn't a stretch either. I mean, remember when he had to purge his own planet from his own body from the infestation of the Sinestro Corps War, the giant comet that, you know, giant asteroid that smashed into his body. That's like, this is like almost a level to, you know, to the same level of that. Instead of having a complete destruction, we have, you know, this green grassy field, which was an excellent piece of art. And then having, you know, the last page, true, you know, it's, you know, Guy Gardner just floating there looking like Jack from Tekken. But you know what, overall it's just such a broad scale. I love Tomasi's writing it, and Gleason's artwork was fantastic, and giving it out to Buckman for, you know, the inking and the other like $5 million that he has on the scope, on the workforce. So you know what? I give this an A+.
And I agree with that. There's too many widespread panels and stuff, but this is the reason you use widespread panels. You know, like, I don't know if I would have loved. I don't love the idea of a double page of Guy Gardner yelling at me and stuff, but like, it works for the pacing of this story. And one of the other things I loved about it too was that what they're doing makes sense in terms of logically. Like,
but I'm sorry, but it's just in a book like this that's like an ensemble cast. I mean, this isn't Green Lantern where it's like supposed to be about Hal and sometimes John, but not really. I mean, it's an ensemble cast book where it's like, you know, every page, every panel is like precious real estate, and it's like they just throw it away on. Well, I can't say rubbish because it is effective to a certain extent, but it's just, it's a waste when you could come over here and, you know, do something with Arisia, do something over here with Isamat. You know, there's lots of things they could do. I mean, it's...
Yeah, but then you can run into it. But then you run into a Geoff Johns situation where you have, like, 9 panels a page. Every panel, someone is explaining to someone their feelings or stories as opposed to, like, us getting a sense of development, you know?
It doesn't need to be dialogue. It could be anything, something, material.
But yeah, to be honest, seeing it from the, you know, and actually we're going into our, you know, our portion of discussion now. To be honest, everything that's been paced through the books, everyone's gotten a good share of screen time in Green Lantern Corps. You know, it's in the Blackest Night Green Lantern Corps book, everybody has had a pretty decent fair shake as to, like, you know, what's going on with them at that moment and what's, you know, what they're going through. I mean, Arisia had her arc early on with her parents and everything. We already seen what we can see whenever we have seen already Siren Inatsu and Enola, Princess I or whatever, how you pronounce her name, Yolanda. We've seen her and in the hospital and the, you know, going against whoever the hell they were at the time, those Black Lanterns. We've seen Kilowog's great moment where he's, you know, fighting, you know, against against his drill sergeant and yelling to the mindless zombie drones that eventually fly away from him. You know, we've had our great character moments in this book.
It's a fundamental question, and if you want to grade it on the issue alone, or do you want to grade it on the arc so far? I mean, I tend to grade on the issue at hand and not everything before.
You know? No, I agree with that. I just feel like this issue pushes the arc in a very specific way that, like, the issue functions as a part of the arc, and the issue, I mean, it stands by itself a good enough issue because this essentially resolves the conflict on Oa. The next issue is going to be them resolving the conflict with Guy, and then the issue is going to end with them going, like, all right, let's get to Earth, and then they all go to Earth, you know? I mean, so I think, I don't know, I think you're getting, I think this issue is pushing forward the agenda it's supposed to, and it's got enough of it's got at least 3 points of action, you know, that separate the story as being, like, a worthwhile bit. I think you move through quickly, I think, because it grabs you and stuff, I really think. I don't know, I think there's so much going on in a non-cluttered way. But yeah, I mean, I can see where you're coming from, that it's space. But I mean, that's really, Tomasi's GLC has been like that from the get-go. I mean, all the storylines have been unnecessarily 4 issues, and I mean, Mongol's still dealing with, like, you know, Daxam or whatever, you know, I mean, like, it just, you know, the fact that they were on the Mercy Planet for, like, 4 issues, and really, I can run down the whole story for you in 4 minutes, you know, but just, I don't know, for me, it's all about pacing, and I think it worked for me because you have Tomasi who's using what's going on in the story perfectly, and then you have Gleason, who's really a godsend. If someone else is drawing this, I don't think I'd like it anywhere near as much.
To be fair, I think it's pretty much the guys upstairs dictating that, you know, you got to do 4 issues, you got to do 5 issues of this, it's got to fit in the trade.
Yeah.
I have to believe he would be doing some 1-shot, 2-shot, 3-shot type of stuff.
If he had free
reign to do so.
Yeah, those do hit once in a while. Yeah,
don't feel like he does.
Some titles have more open reign than others on that kind of situation. Like, for example, Jonah Hex is allowed to have a lot of 1 and 2 go issues because it's just doing its own thing off on the side. It's just,
and they want people to pick it up issue by issue.
They don't even care if it sells. I mean, it's just they want it out there.
Yeah. Well, I think in this, I think, and that's true, I think, but Tomasi's making a point to kind of, like, you know, it's, you think about arc-driven storylines. Something like me, like Geoff Johns, I feel like we'll pad 4 issues out and nothing will really happen and it'll be... Every storyline he does is leading to the next storyline. He's got no conclusive storylines. Even Infinite Crisis, which is the crisis of infinite, the ultimate can't-end crisis, was a setup for 52, you know? And then the same thing with Sinestro Corps War. Sinestro Corps was the ultimate battle, but it ended with more cliffhangers than it started.
Oh, yeah. It even, like, pressed the pause button and made sure we made sure and see that everybody, all the bad guys, survived the end of it. Sure we saw that.
Yeah, sure.
And when the Sinestro Corps War, like, technically speaking, why did the war end? I remember the Cold War or World War II, we don't just, like, win one battle and, like, all right, we took the beach. Hitler's beaten. It's like, no, they're still running around out there, you know? Like,
I'll defend Geoff on this. I do recall reading that he did say that he did not want it to be titled the Sinestro Corps War. He just wanted to be called the Sinestro Corps, but DiDio pressed the issue on the war aspect.
That works, I think. Yeah, for 6.
No, it's very true. I wanted to get to the point of that. You know, Tomasi's arc. His arc is, you know, his storyline here for Blackest Night, Green Lantern Corps, stretches upon his entire, you know, entire them have one set goal in mind, and everyone having a piece of the pie, trying to stop this one set goal in mind, and they're doing an admirable job doing it, and, you know, they're actually showing, you know, themselves showing all these. things that they have to go through and hardships and whatever. While you look at Jeff Johns, Green Lantern, or Blackest Night, and you see Hal Jordan pretty much not doing anything.
Yeah. No. Too much decompression?
He literally...
No, I mean, too much compression.
Like, literally, you'll see like an issue, his arc, or you'll call it, of Blackest Night.
Nothing even... There's nothing even pressurized.
Yeah, there's the Blackest Night, Green Lantern. You will see it, and I'll take the Abin Sur angle, where when he comes back, you see Hal Jordan going like, I don't really care that you're here. I don't really care that you're Abin Sur. I just have to get Sinestro. And Sinestro's all like, oh my God, there's a lot of things happening with me. I'm not sure if I should address them.
Yeah.
Am I the only one who was like, super shocked and kind of happy when Cassie got her heart ripped out?
That's terrible.
Like, I was legitimately shocked. I did not see that coming.
Well, I the only reason I was convinced for a half second that it could be true, I knew it was true immediately after I like thought about it, but because they have no Cassie has literally no feats and no respect to her character that like killing her would really not affect anybody, and it would be a shock. Like, killing Damage. Like, who gives a shit if they kill Damage, you know? Who gives a shit if they kill Wonder Girl? The only people that would give a shit are the people that write Wonder Woman, and DC would probably be like, eh, we're sort of half-assed trying to build her character. Would you mind if we didn't do that? The way Tomasi's pacing out the story with Guy Gardner and the Red Ring, it's become a major part of the arc, and it, now that the official Black Lanterns have been officially, I mean, I get you gotta assume officially defeated, the next storyline is just going to be about resolving the Guy issue. Do you think that this is kind of like belittled, or do you think that, I mean, I personally think that this is the way all the stories should have gone, considering that the last issue of Blackest Night showed that the rings can be given to anybody willy-nilly, and nobody assumes that it's going to have any kind of long-term effect, you know? I mean, Mera has a red ring. I mean, just as that specific example, Mera has a red ring. Is it going to be a real pain in the ass to get it off of her when Blackest Night ends, or is she just going to lose it, you know? I mean, I think the Guy Gardner story shows that this is the kind of stuff they really should have been doing with the rings the whole time, you know?
She's got 24 hours before the ring that's keeping her alive right now goes away.
What, Mera?
Yeah, he's mean.
Yeah, she split up all her blood.
But again, the rings are 24-hour,
watered
down. Go away, but I'm just saying, in terms of the impetus of the story. Yeah. We're having three issues about how difficult it is that Guy's a Red Lantern and the cross, kind of like, the cross argument of that versus, like, you know, it's cool that Scarecrow has one, and it's cool that Lex has one, and it's cool that, you know, the Mera has one, and it shouldn't be cool. It should be completely ridiculous that they have one.
Yes, completely ridiculous.
I mean, wouldn't Mera just be wrecking house and like thinking that like you know everybody's dead and stuff? Like Guy's doing. I mean, Guy tried to kill Kyle. That's ridiculous. You know. I mean, he's obviously focused on the right thing, but I mean, the idea being that her judgment is completely impaired. Why is she even standing in a lineup? She should be attacking everybody. You know.
And it could be solved with a simple blurb about St. Walker's hope is keeping her in check a little bit or something. But
I mean. Gantt did say the rings are going to go away in 24 hours, but still, that's even more condescending, you know, that, like, it takes what really is a superficial idea, and it kind of makes it
even more superficial.
No, this is superficial. Ignore what Tomasi's doing, which is called development. This is just superficial.
I see, be sure to visit thegreenlanterncorps.com, where you can find the latest news, reviews, interviews on all things Green Lantern. While you're there, check out the message boards and interact with us and other fans. Be sure to send us any hate or love mail at the contact at glspotlight.com. You can also find our YouTube channels at youtube.com/glspotlight, youtube.com/neildoublebane, and youtube.com/kuhan. Not to mention, you can also follow half of the cast via Twitter at twitter.com/glspotlight, twitter.com/kuhan, and twitter.com/consciousb. Also, check out Ryan's blog at www.glspotlight.com.
Green Lantern and Green Lantern Corps are properties of DC Comics and do not reflect the authenticity of this podcast.
They fell a thousand years ago in fire, so hot. A carving and a man and a superman, and his name was Alan Scott. A man without fear, and that's for sure. He got his ring from Abin Sur. He fought all the evil hordes, and he's the real one, Hal Jordan. Green